Tape 2, Side 1. Continuing with our interview with Aaron Sachs, this is Ruth Weiner with my partner Mildred Menlow for the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History No. 2 project. We had finished last week, and you said you really wanted to talk a little bit about the Israel Bond Rally. Do you remember what it was you had in mind that you wanted to tell us about it?
I know that one of the early rallies was held in the backyard of the prison home. And Henny Youngman, the comedian, was the entertainer. And it was an outstanding event, very well attended, and Saul and Fanny Prison lent their home for the occasion.
With all the trimmings.
With all the trimmings, which means good food and Zionist spirit. I was then living in Boston, Massachusetts, and my mother sent me a clipping from the Jewish Chronicle because she was one of the people who attended that particular rally. And I was impressed, both with my mother's attending the rally and where it was, and with Israel. Do you remember when?
Sure, I just thought.
Yeah.
About 1951.
Yeah, beginning I was in Boston right. And between 50 and 53. Right.
A couple of questions that I wanted to ask. Since this is very confidential, it goes into the files and isn't open, tell us something about the interesting personalities of the staff, the volunteer boards that you have worked with.
Well, during the many years of social work, I had the good fortune of working with boards of directors of volunteers who really were concerned about the community. I respected these people because they weren't being paid, they came from real devotion, but I also felt that they had to be listened to and they had to be talked to. Many people come in and volunteer either with the wrong idea of what their role is and walk all over the professionals. Many people come in with expectations that can't be fulfilled, while others are disappointed, possibly because they present things and they don't know whatever happens to their presentations. So I made it my policy to care for and feed the volunteers delicately and with dignity. Many of the people I've had the good fortune of working with in my professional career, they as volunteer than I as a professional, have become my friends. We see one another occasionally with a warmth. When I retired, in one of my retirements 2.5 years ago, the board tendered the most beautiful affair and spoke from the heart. Board members presented me with things I absolutely cannot use and didn't want, plaques and platters, but the feeling was there. I often think of the one board member who on his own gave me a sweatshirt that said, "It's worth it." Because so often in this kind of work, you wonder if all the effort really means anything. But this man's t-shirt, which I'm glad to wear from time to time, just said it's worth it. Among the people were some of the most sophisticated, wealthy, successful Pittsburghers, and also some of the poorest, untrained beginners. When I was with the anti-poverty program, on my board of directors were a number of people who were on public assistance, a number of people who were just at the bottom of the barrel, but who enjoyed my letting them know that what they think really counts and will make a difference. Some of these people became educated, even though they never expected to be, are now professionals in the field, and I have the joy of knowing I had something to do with it. Those who were very wealthy, chairman of the board of large corporations, have been kind enough to say nice things about me and remembered the difference I made. One quick incident is that I worked with the wife of the chairman of the board of Alcoa. She was on my board of directors and was invited to an affair President Nixon tendered at the National Center for Volunteer Action. And Mrs.
Can you repeat that again?
The National Center for Voluntary Action in Washington, D.C. Was an agency set up by George Romney, and President Nixon held an affair inviting to it the leaders in volunteerism, including my board member, Jean George. I was invited, and Mrs. George thought we should both go, and she would take W.H. Crome George, chairman of the board of Alcoa, her husband, as her date, and I took Shirley as my date, and we flew to Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, where President Nixon hosted the dinner. The Georges and the Saxes flew down to the dinner in an Alcoa plane, and we were the only ones, of course, on the plane. And when we were 32,000 feet up in the air, Mr. George asked about our boys, and I said they were with my mother-in-law, and he said, well, why don't you call up and see how they are? And that was the first time I had ever made a phone call from 32,000 feet up in the air. And Mother thought we were already in Washington, and I said, no, we're over Harrisburg. And she said, you're kidding. And I said, let me talk to the boys. They'll be pleased to talk to us. And she said, oh, they're outside playing, because she didn't believe that we were calling from the plane. But we did get to Washington, where we were met with a car, taken to the Kennedy Center, where we were introduced to Sergeant and Eunice Shriver, George and Lenora Romney, Dick and Pat Nixon, and these are not the people I deal with every day, but that evening, I think we were known, as Shirley and I, as the two kosher dinners, but there were about 400 people there, and they managed to give us what we were able to eat. So I did meet many exciting, wonderful, interesting people.
Were there some who were less than cooperative?
Yes.
Might make interesting meetings.
Yeah, there were some who liked to have their names associated with the board of directors, who just didn't have the time to serve, and were annoyed by my prodding. Which I said, you know, I could understand how busy you are, and you are important, but we have to have space on the board for people who could really devote the time and have the interest and the skill to help this organization meet its aim. So there were some whose attendance was not good who decided, with some help, to leave. There were others who expected of me certain things I didn't think I could perform, either because of the role I was in or my own abilities, and they were annoyances, but with understanding, I think I saw what they were driving at. I was an old-fashioned type of social worker who tried to understand the problems of those who came to us for help, as well as recognizing that people who work in social service are people who might themselves have problems. And there were board members who thought I was much too kind. I should have gotten rid of some of these. My justification justification for holding on to them is that there are times in everyone's life when they can have crises and need understanding. And I made the decision as to who was really performing worthwhile to stay, and there were board members who disagreed with my opinion. But I got through in the last agency 22 years, and I guess they liked me enough to let me stay.
You mentioned something, I'm not sure we've got enough in details, about the Health and Welfare Planning Association. Tell us more about that.
The Health and Welfare Planning Association, with which I was associated for 12 years, was then called the Federation of Social Agencies. It was created around 1922 as a forum for all of the agencies to exchange information, to make plans for changes in community services. The Federation of Social Agencies became Health and Welfare Federation, and later the Health and Welfare Planning Association. Its three functions when I was associated with it was coordination, research, and planning. My particular responsibility was in the group work, recreation, and camping area, where I had responsibility for consulting with the Ys, the YMWHA, the YMCA, the YWCA, the Scouts, the Boys Clubs, the settlement houses, and helping them all work together, helping them change what they were doing to meet new community concerns. I was there for 12 years, and one of my responsibilities there that I thought was very exciting was serving as executive of the Western Pennsylvania section of the American Camping Association. In that role, I visited about 110 camps in Western Pennsylvania. This is beyond the Pittsburgh area. It was all of Western Pennsylvania. And determining if they were meeting the American Camping Association standard for the right kind of personnel and help and sanitation and physical facility to make the camps worthwhile for the boys and girls, men and women who attend them.
That's an overwhelming job, 110
camps in July and August.
That's what I'm saying.
And during the year, we did have monthly meetings of the camp directors. During those years, which would have been 53 to 65, we organized the first senior citizens camping program.
Tell us about that.
It was very exciting. The old Irene Kaufman settlement had Golden Age clubs and occasional couple of days of camping for the older people at Emma Kaufman Camp. Through the American Camping Association program, we organized an inter-agency camping program where the older people from various settlement houses in the YWCA and the YMCA had a week at Lillian Taylor Camp, which was the camp of the Kingsley Association. Many interesting things happened, including a number of marriages, which shocked all of us, but some of the older gentlemen met older campers, and on the beautiful camp trails walking through the woods, they decided that they wanted to be together. So the second year we had it, we had to make arrangements for many more double rooms than we did the first year.
That's lovely. But, that's a nice little side benefit.
Well,
yeah. Let's see if there's any other questions here. United Way, you talked about that a little bit.
Right.
wondered about your relationship and how it was then as compared with how it is now.
United Way was... United Way is the organization that had been organized as the community chest, developed into the United Fund, and is now called the United Way. Originally, it was a fundraising vehicle to eliminate the need for every agency to go out doing its own fundraising. The agencies I was connected with, the YM and WHA, Health and Welfare Federation, received funds from the Community Chest, now the United Way, for its operating budget. My role as part of the Health and Welfare Federation staff was to serve as consultant to the United Way on questions related to group work, recreation, and camping. So for 12 years, I sat in on the budget committees, meetings with the Ys, the settlements, the boys clubs, to explain things to the committee as an objective person, not asking for their money, assist these agencies in presenting their needs to the budget committees. Later, when I was executive of Helpline, Information and Volunteer Services, we had to appeal to the community chest for funding to the United Way. We had to present a budget every year. We had to be scrutinized to determine that the money they gave us was being well spent, and we had to be studied again and again to make sure for them that we were fulfilling a community need. So there were times I hated the United Way, even though I was obligated to it. Helpline was an agency that did not charge clients for services. Therefore, most of our funding had to come from United Way, so I had to accept some of their discipline, some of their rules, some of their questions, but I did have a good relationship with them because from the United Way's point of view, our agency was very important in directing people to whatever other agency was appropriate. Toward the end of my career, United Way thought, if I am retiring, they would love to have Helpline as a department of the United Way. So it meant the end of the agency I created and nurtured and lived in and worked for, but had the knowledge that as a department of the United Way, it would survive because it didn't have to worry about the United Way giving it money. It would be the United Way, which Helpline is today. The United Way was very active in planning my retirement party, certainly working with us on the merger of Helpline into the United Way. And after my retirement, they did invite me to come back as a consultant to the United Way and let me choose the projects that I wanted to work on that I thought somebody at United Way should deal with. So for about a year, I assumed responsibility for two projects of my own creation. One was the coordination of the service clubs. Council of Jewish Women, an outstanding service organization, doing many, many special things, just was not well known to the Kiwanis and the Rotary and the National Council of Negro Women and the Junior League, and the same was true with all of them. Rotary undertook many projects that maybe the Federation of Women's Clubs was also interested in, but they weren't talking to one another. So during my year of consulting for the United Way, I brought these 16 organizations together. Junior League, Council of Jewish Women, Rotary, Kiwanis, the Lions, the whole works. And they did meet quarterly and have continued to do so, exchanging ideas, picking up new ideas, learning about community needs that they could become involved in. That was one project with the United Way that I dealt with. The other was developing a program for newcomers. My feeling being that many people move into the community who could give volunteer service if they knew where to give it, and who could use help, because many people come into Pittsburgh with aged parents or children who have problems or loneliness problems and housing problems. And I felt United Way should get to the newcomers with its message and develop a few ways for this to happen. So my relationship with the United Way today is still warm and friendly, but not active.
What ways were there to reach the newcomers? How would you know about them? How would you reach out to them?
I'm glad you asked that. I worked through the Greater Pittsburgh Board of Realtors, spoke at some of their meetings, letting them know how, when they sell houses to people from out of town, one of the things they could emphasize is that the Pittsburgh community is well served with agencies and provides the opportunity for them to get involved in community affairs. So many of the realtors enclosed in letters to their prospects a form that I developed, a flyer that I developed. We also had a special little flyer that I had responsibility for, sent to the corporations for them to give to new employees, letting them know about chances for giving and getting help in Pittsburgh. I did appear before a number of groups and told about reaching newcomers, and for a few months that worked very well. After I left the United Way, I'm not sure this was one of the priorities, and it did not continue.
It's a good idea. You mentioned to us the Where to Turn and Helpline, but I don't know if we have a notion of how you started. I mean, it's easy to say I developed, but it doesn't happen quite that easily. It's worth taking some time for us to...
When I worked at the Health and Welfare Federation between 1953 and 1965, I was aware of the fact that many people who needed help were falling between the cracks. In Allegheny County, we had, at that point, 800 agencies. And yet I kept hearing that there were people who wanted help, who needed help, who either didn't know that the agencies existed or went to the wrong one and were disappointed and frustrated. So I felt very strongly that Pittsburgh needed a central information and referral service where people who could use help, were ready for help, could find out where to get it. The community chest at that point did hire one worker who served on the public relations staff of the community chest, Elizabeth Bruno, who became the answer lady. And Miss Bruno was able to answer three phones at once, but they don't make too many people like Miss Bruno. She kept little notes of places where people could get help. She really had nobody in her office but herself, and the volume of calls was tremendous. There was a feeling that maybe this should be expanded to an agency, and I was involved in helping decide, working with lay committees, what was needed, and not only in the help getting side, but also the help giving side. So we needed a volunteer bureau, we needed an information referral service, and these were both combined in what was called information and volunteer services, which evolved into the present helpline. I feel much of what developed there was the result of good work, cooperation between the lay people who were able to get the action and the professionals who were willing to share information about their agencies, were willing to accept referrals from the outside. It couldn't have been done without a cooperative spirit. But that all began way back in the late 40s, and here it is, 90s, and it's still continuing.
You mentioned 800 agencies in Allegheny County. How does that rate with other places?
Well, 800 agencies were the ones we worked with when I started. There are now over 1,600, and I think there are more than in many places. There are a lot of non-traditional agencies that have developed. People seeing needs for certain things and just working on the development of new services. Some problems that have come out, come to the fore, might have always existed, but people didn't talk about wife abuse and child abuse and parent abuse. And agencies have been developed that deal with the battered wife and women who need shelter and the children who are in need of special housing because they are retarded. There are a number of residences for pregnant teenage girls who didn't in the past have residences to go to, even though the problem and the need for it might have been there. So in Allegheny County now, we're up to about 1,600 agencies, and the only place where track is being kept of them, what they're doing, how they're doing, is Helpline.
Did you ever work with Charlotte Arnold?
Yes, one of my favorite people. Did you interview her?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Charlotte was a volunteer, as she probably told you, with B'nai B'rith, and was active in the development of their call for action, and then saw a need for someone to do something with female offenders. And she held my hand and lived with me, and I held hers in relations with the United Way and convincing the United Way that what she was doing, what I was doing, was good. And Charlotte was one of the people on a surprise tape that was played at my retirement party, where someone had gone to a number of my colleagues and asked them to say, I hope, true things about me, that I was really pleased and surprised that Charlotte was one of them on the tape. A number of people I hadn't heard from for years were asked to say a few things on the tape, and when I heard their voices, I was a little shocked and a little worried about what they would say, but it worked out well. So I did work with Charlotte.
You mentioned to us that Shirley worked at Riverview.
Yes.
I think all of us are aware that Riverview doesn't quite meet our dreams and hopes for. Tell us something about what she has said, what she has seen, what you think might be done.
When people have friends, relatives, parents in an institution, a geriatric center, they want so much for them. They often want things for them that they can't get for them. The parents, the relatives are old and sick, the visitor, the sons, the daughters, the nieces, the nephew, come in sometimes, very, very infrequently, and they see what's wrong, and they wish things weren't that way, and they complain to people in the community. And your question angers me because I know the staff. I am there myself as the husband of a devoted staff member. I see what devotion is given to the workers. I see that the impossible cannot be achieved. Many of these people are sick, and they require a lot of special attention, and they get what the staff feels is the best for them. There are times when something might not smell like roses, but the same thing would happen if these people were in their own homes. There are times when the people might complain about the food. They're old and things don't taste the way they used to, so they might say the food is no good. I do have an uncle who is a patient there, and we are very much concerned about Uncle Joe. His family thought long and hard before he was placed there, but he is clean. He is taken care of. I visit my uncle. And although I can't speak as a son, I can say that I'm pleased with the nursing care he's getting, the survival care he's getting. He gets his meals, he's clean, he's cared for. As far as other patients, my mother was 91 when she died, but until the last week of her life, she asked me to take her to visit friends who were at the home. Now, that's almost 15 years ago. But even at that time, we heard terrible things in the community from people who really didn't know and weren't in a position to judge.
End of tape 2.